This is the Sean Hannity Show podcast.
And this is Peter Johnson Jr. filling in for Sean Hannity on the Sean Hannity Show. Welcome back. This is the topic that everyone has been talking about for weeks. The Newtown tragedy, gun violence. How do we stop it? What are our Second Amendment rights? Where are we going in this country? Is there a Second Amendment? Will the government take America's firearms going forward in a way that we find objectionable? With us now is John Lott, former chief economist for the United States Sentencing Commission and author of More Guns, Less Crime. He's going to talk about the most important things you need to know when you discuss gun violence and the Second Amendment with your friends and sometimes your foes. Hey, John, how are you?
Oh, great to talk to you again. Thanks for having me on.
I'm delighted to be with you again. Let's talk about some of the most important things that people need to know and talk about them the way that you do in very intelligent, empirical, fact-driven ways so people really understand the issue. And let's talk about some of the myths there are. You wrote an article recently that you said that it's a myth that more guns equal fewer murders. Tell us about that. Let's start there.
Well, I think it was a myth that more guns meant more murders. But, no, I mean, people constantly hear about things on the news where bad things happen with guns. It's not surprising that the natural reaction that people have if something bad happens is simply try to get rid of the guns. But what's often forgot about, and outside maybe Fox and a couple other places, you just don't hear any stories about, are the defensive gun uses that you have. So, you know, you go and you ban guns in Washington, D.C. or Chicago, or you ban them in other places in the world. Every place that we've seen guns banned has seen an increase in murder rates. And there's a simple reason for that, and that is when you ban guns, it's the law-abiding good citizens who turn in their guns, not the criminals. And to the extent that you disarm the law-abiding good citizens, you actually make it easier for criminals to go and commit crimes.
You say in that article, Professor, in 2011, the U.S. murder rate was 4.7 per 100,000 people, yet the gun murder rate was 3.1. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, obviously there are lots of different ways to kill people. I generally try to focus on total murders there than rather how individuals go and get murdered. But the United States is not anywhere near the highest in terms of either total murders or in terms of gun murders. I mean, every continent in the world has countries which have much higher rates in both categories than we have here in the United States. And if you look across all countries, rather than just selectively picking a few countries there, you find, in fact, more gun ownerships related to less violence and fewer murders. The best way to look at things, though, because there's so many reasons that murder rates can go and vary across countries, is to see what happens to murder rates before and after a ban's put in place. So, I mean, a lot of people say, well, look, the UK has a murder rate that's about a third the rate of the United States, or they'll say Germany has a relatively low murder rate. And that's true. But the thing is, they had even lower murder rates relative to the United States before they put in their extremely restrictive gun control laws. As I mentioned a minute ago, every place in the world that you see bans put in place, you'll see an increase in murder rates. And you would think it would have some impact on the debate to see that happen so consistently.
Let's talk about background checks. There seems to be in some quarters, well, okay, let's do more background checks. But you talk about something called the 40% myth. What's the 40% myth, and how does it relate to background checks, and whether background checks will really prevent the type of violence we saw in Connecticut and Wisconsin and Colorado?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought this up. There have been two claims that have been made consistently in this debate. The first one is that supposedly 40% of gun sales are made without going through background checks. And the second claim is that 1.7 million prohibited people have supposedly been prevented from buying guns because of the Brady Act. Both claims are completely false. The 40% number, I don't even think most people know where this comes from, but it comes from a survey that was done from 91 through 94, so it's 20 years ago, and looked at 251 purchases of guns, so it's a small sample. But the big problem is that most of the purchases were made even before the Federal Brady Act, which creates some, you know, computerized background checks for guns, was in place. And the other problem is that if you look at the original study that was done under the Clinton administration, what they looked at was transfers. They said 36% of transfers were done without a background check, and that's a huge difference from saying sales. So I guess Obama and others round it from 36 to 40, but the thing is, the vast majority of those transfers are either within family inheritances or within family gifts. You know, about 92% of inheritances in the survey were within family. And so, you know, if the president had said rather than 40% of gun sales are occurring without background checks, he'd be said, look, we have a fair number of parents giving their kids birthday or Christmas gifts without going through background checks, or inheritances are going to their kids, I don't think it would have had anywhere near the impact. Plus, gun sales have changed so dramatically over the last 20-some years that are there. The big difference is that back in 92, 93, you would have had about 284,000 federally licensed dealers. Most of those were what we used to call kitchen table dealers, so people who would sell a few guns out of their home. And right now we have about 118,000.
So you're saying it became a lot harder to become a federal firearm licensed dealer
exactly,
in the United
right.
States. And so that tightened it up. But in terms of gun shows, let's talk about what's out there in the mainstream media. The argument always is, well, okay, why can't gun shows be subject to the same Brady checks that other firearms purchases are? What's your thought on that, Professor?
Well, I think people need to understand the problems that we have with the background check system. People talk about the benefits all the time, but they never talk about the cost. So the other number that we brought up before about the 1.7 million prohibited individuals, people need to understand that about 95% at least of those are false positives. That means law-abiding citizens who are stopped from buying guns for what can turn out to be months. An analogy of this would be, you may remember the late Senator Ted Kennedy was on the no-fly list 5 times. Would we say that 5 times a terrorist had been prevented from flying? No, nobody would say that. He flew on a later flight. He may have missed the one flight he was on because somebody else had the same name, apparently, who we didn't want to fly. But you wouldn't. The correct terminology there is initial denials rather than prohibited individuals. That's used all the time. And the reason why this is important is that for a lot of that 1.7, that may simply be an inconvenience for the vast majority. But for some small portion of those individuals, what the problem that you face is that they may need a gun quickly for self-defense.
Well, let's go through a few points. Are you in favor of clips of, say, 7 or 10 or more?
Friend limits? No, I don't. I mean, we've tried this. We tried limits with the federal assault weapons ban from 1994 to 2004.
Did it work?
No. I mean, not even the Clinton administration funded studies found that there were any benefits from that or from any of the other assault weapons ban rules that they had. And, you know, there are lots of reasons to go through this, but, you know, you're not going to stop criminals from getting these magazines if that's really what they want to have. Magazine is just a simple metal box with a spring at the bottom. It's extremely easy to go and make. And, you know, there are lots of benefits also for civilians having that type of firearm capability. I mean, I can give you 10 cases from just December where victims ended up firing more than 10 shots to go and try to protect themselves.
Professor, where does mental health and media penetration, video games, violent video games, where is that in the constellation, in the spectrum in terms of causing gun violence in the United States? Does that play a role at all?
Well, I think even the proponents who are pushing this will say that it's a very tiny percentage of those who are mentally ill, you know, maybe a percent or so, who actually pose a danger in terms of violence to themselves or other individuals. I wish there were studies that we could point to that could kind of definitively determine one way or another whether video games or movies or others have an impact. I can believe they may, but we just don't have strong evidence with regard to that. But, you know, the issue that you face, whether it's stopping criminals or whether it's stopping somehow people who have mental illness from getting guns, is that with all these things, we face trade-offs. We want to know how many criminals, how many of these other individuals we're actually going to stop with the background check versus how many people who are law-abiding who may need a gun quickly for self-defense. We're going to make it so that they're not going to be able to go and defend themselves. And that's something that's just never talked about in this discussion, that trade-off that's there. And I think when you look at these things, the number of people who are problematic, who try to go and get guns through background checks, are essentially zero. I mean, it's an incredibly tiny number. But we do know that there's a significant number of people who need to go and get guns for self-defense who are prevented from doing that for long periods of time because of errors in the background system that we have.
As a final question, Professor, when people are sitting around the kitchen table and they're debating the Second Amendment and gun violence in this country, what should they keep in mind in terms of making the arguments about defending the Second Amendment?
Right. Well, I think that's the key issue. And to me, the issue that's of primary importance to everybody in this debate, really, is safety. And too often when we debate these things, people just say, well, they just look at the benefits of these rules and don't look at the costs. And the problem is that while a lot of these rules, you know, maybe something like gun-free zones is a good example, or we just went through the problems with the background checks, but they think, if I just ban guns from certain areas, they'll make people safe. The problem is they don't think about who is stopped from having guns in those areas, how it's law-abiding good citizens who obey these rules rather than criminals. And rather than making it safer for victims, it makes it safer for the criminals because they don't have to worry about victims being able to go and defend themselves. If I had one question to make to kind of crystallize this that I would ask somebody that was debating on this, I'd say, would you put up a sign in front of your home that said this home is a gun-free zone? And my guess is none of the people that they'd be talking to who would be trying to advocate getting rid of guns or whatever would be willing to put up a sign like that, and it's obvious why they wouldn't do it. But yet, even though people wouldn't put up a sign like that in front of their own home, we somehow put up those types of signs in front of other areas which are just as vulnerable and we care a lot about.
Well, Professor John Lott, making the case and talking about making it safer for victims in this country. John Lott, author of More Guns, Less Crime. John, thanks for being here again on the Sean Hannity Show.
All right. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Good to see you. Hey, and a lot of people are calling in on this right now. Natalie in California. Natalie, what do you have to say?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I actually just graduated from college last month, and I attended a liberal college out in California. And my comment is just that for the past 2 years, I've sat in liberal professors' classrooms, and I've heard that criminals are not rational thinkers. They're going to commit crimes no matter what kind of laws are in place, no matter what kind of restrictions are out there. And so it just doesn't seem like any sort of a solution to put gun control, gun restrictions on law-abiding citizens, because the bottom line is criminals are going to do whatever they want to commit the crime or to complete whatever action they want to complete. So I just really have a problem with trying to regulate, you know, individual freedoms that are guaranteed in the Constitution to everyday citizens.
Natalie, do you have a firearm?
I do not.
Would you get one based upon what you're seeing in the national landscape now?
I've been considering it, yes.
You have?
There's no reason to not own one. If they're going to take away my freedom to have one, why not go get one now while I still can?
Thanks, Natalie. Jose in Miami. How are you, Jose?
Hello. How are you?
I'm terrific. What's going on?
A couple of thoughts. This whole gun debate, I think we have lost focus on the real purpose and intent of the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment, in my opinion, was created to dissuade tyrants from trying to take away our inalienable rights. That we use, that we can use firearms for self-defense, defending ourselves or our families from criminals, is a tangential effect or a byproduct. But, you know, the first and foremost is too many people in this country today have no understanding of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the whole, I guess, the history of the country and what led to the creation of the Bill of Rights. And I just, what do you think?
I think that you make sense. That's the historical basis. But going forward, do we have a greater right? I don't think we're at any risk, or I hope not, of a tyrant taking over here in the United States. I think our courts are still in business, and I think people like Jose and Peter Johnson and Sean Hannity are still speaking up for our rights. But you're absolutely right. You got the history right, Jose, and you're on the Sean Hannity Show. This is Peter Johnson, Jr. We'll be right back.
Hannity Headlines.
A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you
everywhere you go.
To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
This is Peter Johnson, Jr., filling in for Sean Hannity on the Sean Hannity Show. It's been a great day and a great sunny, cold day here in New York City. Coming up on the show, your calls and Aaron Nearbon, who's got an incredible organization called TroopsDirect.org, bringing the things to our troops that they can't get. You can get me on Twitter at Peter Johnson Jr. This is the Sean Hannity Show, 1-800-941-SEAN, the Sean Hannity Show.
We know you never want to miss the Sean Hannity Show.
And now you never have to.
Just sign up for Hannity Headlines. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you on your laptop, your mobile phone, everywhere you go. Even to your liberal in-laws' place in Vermont.
So, yeah.
And after a few hours of that, you'll be glad you brought Sean along. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
And this is Peter Johnson, Jr., filling in for Sean Hannity, my dear friend and one of the great voices, one of the great spokesmen for our country's future. I'm so happy you're with us today. You know, do you have a loved one in the service? Do you have a loved one who's really serving our country overseas right now? Even if you don't, you should listen to this because it is absolutely shocking. Our troops are not getting what they need on a daily basis. But there is an organization called Troops Direct. That's right, Troops Direct. And the founder of Troops Direct, Aaron Nearbon, is here with us today to talk about what he's done with this incredible charitable organization. Aaron, how are you?
I'm good, Peter. How are you?
God, thank you for doing what you're doing. If you go to troopsdirect.org, you can see what you guys have done. I was just amazed at some of the things that you provided. When our service members were drinking impure water pumped out of the ground at about 130 degree heat, you sent over like 100,000 units of hydrating powder.
As well as water purification systems.
Yeah, when we needed stretchers and when we needed stethoscopes and syringes and gauze and gloves and wool socks and long johns and hand warmers, toothbrushes, Troops Direct stepped in. Tell us about why we have this problem and how you guys are responding to it. An incredible task.
Well, you know, Peter, Troops Direct is really different from other groups because we are fielding these requests literally 24 hours a day, every day of the year, from commanders around the globe. And we're not just Afghanistan, but we're Africa. We are certainly in Afghanistan. We're helping those that are at sea and everywhere else. And what we found is a lot of units are in need of items, Peter, that maybe aren't available through the military supply channels or might just not be issued or on back order or whatever, but these units are in need of it. And we're not talking about cookies and candy, but medical supplies and equipment and height.
Well, like tourniquets. I read that you guys provide tourniquets. I also read that there was an elite team that was deploying in a so-called hotspot, and that somehow you were able to get them the items that they needed from the United States to this confidential hotspot overseas overnight.
We had units that were going into North Africa, and as they were deploying from here in the U.S., there was a lot of critically needed stuff that was just not available to the supply chain. And as exactly as you said, the commander contacted us. We amassed everything and shipped it out. And that's what Troops Direct does. And we do it in real time. No waiting, no red tape, no bureaucracies. And we do this, Peter, as a nonprofit organization. And so there's no expense to the requesting unit or to the taxpayers.
So people can go to troopsdirect.org and help out, and it's a worthy organization. Mm-hmm. But what is the federal government? What is our branches of service? What do they say about this?
All of the commanders throughout the branches of service that we've spoken to, whether it's colonels or anybody else, have really praised Troops Direct's efforts. And since I founded Troops Direct in 2010, the proof is really in the pudding, because we, by the end of February here, will have shipped about 55,000 pounds, 27 tons of requested support around the globe. And commanders know about us, and even the highest of brass. And no one said a bad thing yet, because they recognize that as, you know, a civilian organization, we are helping literally to save lives on a daily basis and truly help to get the job done so that we can get our Americans back home.
Well, let me ask you, if I'm a young man or a young woman serving overseas, how do I get to you? If I need a tourniquet, I need boots, I need hand warmers, I need metal detectors and GPS units. Those are some of the things that you provided to people. How do these folks get to you? Not through the chain of command, obviously. Are they emailing you? Are they on the radio? Is there a ham radio? What are they doing?
We are receiving emails, satellite phone calls, even Facebook interactions, of all things, from units, because they've heard about us from other units. It's really gone viral around the globe. And they've requested, let's take a real scenario here, Peter.
Please.
We had a unit in Afghanistan, and they were supplied a generator to run their small base. Well, the generator didn't have any replacement parts, and they went up their supply chain and said, we need these replacement parts or our generator is going to die. And they said, sorry, 12-month back order on the parts. So the chief of that unit contacted us and said, we need parts ABC123, and they solicited us for this. And we had the parts literally in our hands in 24 hours and pushed out to Afghanistan the following day. So we're not saying, hey, you know, we're here to help. They're finding us because they know that we're able to get them what they can't get through the supply chain. And as you mentioned, it's 100 tourniquets. It is just yesterday, Peter, we shipped out to a unit that was in Afghanistan, or is in Afghanistan, items that are included the tourniquets, but also emergency artificial airway kits, so that when you have a wounded soldier on the ground, they can perform immediate surgery right there because they couldn't get it through the supply chain.
Let's talk about something like chalk. Now, I saw chalk on the list. Why is chalk important, and how does that save American lives?
Chalk powder is being used literally every day because of Troops Direct to mark where roadside bombs are emplaced, but also to mark a safe path through these deadly minefields in Afghanistan. And what they had been using in the past was Q-tips, rocks, and even bottle caps to mark these. And what they have requested in this chalk powder is something that will give them a safe passage from point A to point B, because as we all know, these IEDs are killing and wounding Americans on a daily basis. And they are coming back to us and saying that this chalk powder that they are carrying on their persons daily is saving lives and saving limbs. And that's not us saying that. That's them telling us.
Wow. Aaron, I understand that you're not a veteran, but you decided to do this. Why did you decide to do this?
One of my longtime friends, who I went to college with, is a career Marine. And in the summer of 2010, he was deployed to Afghanistan as a commander of a Marine Corps unit, and they were frontline infantrymen. And I sent him a single care package for his birthday, and he came back to me and said, "Hey, thank you so much. I needed that box, but I gave it to the Marines under my command because they needed it even more than I did." And so I asked him, "What else do you need?" And he wasn't asking for magazines and chewing gum. He was saying, "We need boot laces. We need socks. We need stethoscopes." And so another box goes out, and another box. And then, as I mentioned earlier, other units started hearing about this supply chain, and they started contacting us as well. And we are very proud of the fact that we can fulfill almost any order. You know, you mentioned the GPS units. It's a special forces unit, one of the most well-known special forces units out there. And they could not get GPS units to mark their way through their area of operation. And they reached out to us, and we were able to get those GPS units exactly as they needed, shipped over to them, and it included the ability for them to mark where roadside bombs had gone off so that they could, traverse through these, deadly areas. Another important thing, Peter, also, that we should not forget about is dogs are a very active component in what we do in Africa as well as in Afghanistan.
So what are you doing for the dogs? Are you bringing dogs?
The dogs are used for not only security purposes, but also to sniff out roadside bombs, as an example. And just last week, we were shipping over clippers, and follow me on this. We were shipping over clippers for a helicopter medevac unit that goes out to pick up wounded dogs. And these clippers are used so that they can start running IV lines on these dogs while they are still in flight to save their lives as well. And we shipped them the top-grade clippers so that they could start, shaving the skin and prepping for surgery while they were still in flight. I mean, these are the things that Troops Direct does.
Well, I've got to take a page out of Sean Hannity's lexicon, out of his book, and say, you are a great American. Aaron Nierbaum of Troops Direct, troopsdirect.org, bringing the stuff to our men and women that they can't get and keeping them alive. Keep on doing what you're doing, Aaron Nierbaum, troopsdirect.org.
Can I add something really quick?
Go ahead.
As a nonprofit organization, we often get the question of, what percentage of every dollar goes to the troops? And we are very proud that as a nonprofit 501c3 organization, 87 cents of every dollar that we receive from Americans goes directly to the program of shipping things over to our Americans in Africa, especially now, but also in Afghanistan and everywhere else.
Well, I'm here with my young daughter, Veronica, and our other daughter, Blanche, and we're all going to be making a gift when we get off the air. Keep on doing it. Debbie in Maryland, what do you think about this?
So much for taking my call. I really appreciate you taking my call. I'm a mom of an Army soldier, and I got to tell you, it's been years that I started with my, sending care packages, because I don't do the level tubes direct. I heard their story before. They are absolutely amazing, and I got to tell you, I hear this all the time. I just got feedback last night, 3 o'clock in the morning, from a buddy of my son's who's in Afghanistan, who was talking about how the water smells like poop. He said, like, water purification is a huge thing.
Sure, absolutely.
They're constantly asking for Britas and those pure units and things like that, that they can purify the water, like, right there. And socks, like, back in April, I remember there was one special forces group that I heard from. Those guys were down to a pair of socks each. And it was really funny because people were sending the wrong kind of socks. And I said, I said, look, tell me what kind of socks. There's specific things. And knowing now, right now, what broke my heart was when Andrea Tantaros said on the Five the other day, and I know Sean loves her, and she thinks he's a great guy, but she was talking about how they're not getting breakfast. I mean, our guys are not
But Debbie, let me
basic.
Ask you, what are you thinking about this? I mean, you must wake up sick in the middle of the night and say...
I'm up a lot of nights, like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm up because I'm praying for these guys, and I'm trying to find ways. I mean, you know, I do everything I can. Like, I just sent out some packages the other day. I'm sending them soup. I'm sending them socks. I'm sending them... And if every American, if you can't support, like, by doing it yourself, then support one of these ministries. Because I'm telling you, the one thing I keep hearing, and I'm sure Aaron could have touched on this too, they are not, there's not PXs right now for those guys to get things. The one group that I just heard from 3 days ago told me that they've been waiting for 3 months for their PX to reopen. He said they just got word it's not going to. So they rely on the American people, their families, to get them their stuff. And you hear all the time, a commander asks for stuff, but he passes it down to his guys. That is universal. You never see anybody hoarding anything or looking out for themselves. They all look out for each other. And a friend of mine has a son who's a medic. He's had 2 tours in Afghanistan. We supported him through both of his tours. He practically cried at the level, just not having the basics of the medicine things that they need. They can't get the stuff they need. This is ridiculous. And I'm sick of our government tying the hands of our guys. Like, they're supposed to fight with one arm tied behind their back, 2 MREs a day. They just closed down the breakfast and stuff. Those guys need a good, solid, you know, food. And if we're going to sequester and cut things, it just shouldn't be our guys.
Well, we're not going to be sequestering and cutting our boys and girls that are fighting for us and dying and making our Constitution live, Debbie, because that's not fair. That's wrong. And the American people are not going to allow it. Debbie, God bless you and God bless your family. This is the Sean Hannity Show. Peter Johnson, Jr. This is Peter Johnson, Jr., filling in for Sean Hannity on the Sean Hannity Show. As we get ready for a Super Bowl weekend, as we get ready to kind of wind down and relax, thanks to Sean Hannity for having me here today, and thanks to Lauren and Jason for making this show so memorable and so terrific. We learned a lot today together about our Constitution, about our freedoms, and about how fragile they are, and how real people step in and do real things for real Americans. Troopsdirect.org, stepping in to the breach where our troops have not been served as well as they should have. Real Americans speaking out and doing for real Americans. It's always a pleasure. Sean Hannity's an American treasure. I'm happy to be his friend. I'm happy to be here with you today on this day as we move forward into February and our bright future on the Sean Hannity Show.